racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And back once again for another week of Inside Motorsport. We've got Craig Revell and Peter Norton on the other side of the panel tonight. Yours truly, Colin Ford, flying the beast, as they say. And if things go quiet at some stage, you know the fact I've hit the wrong button. But of course, the big news we're all smiling for this week is the fact that the Rally of Canberra has a naming rights sponsor, and which means that the Rally of Canberra will be coming to Canberra for at least the next 3 years, which is great news to hear, guys.
Yes, it's just fantastic. It really did look in dire straits there for a little while, but thanks to a lot of effort from a large team of people working behind the scenes, they've managed to push things along. And on Friday, we're all very pleased to hear that Subaru and Silverstone Tyres will be sponsoring the event for the next 3 years.
Mm. Anyhow, we've got, I think, Adrian Dudock, who's the man who can tell us all about what was happening there.
Well, after a tumultuous couple of weeks, it is great news to have Adrian Dudock join us on the line. And with the announcement on Friday that the Rally of Canberra is fully sponsored for the next few years, it was a lot of hard work. Yourself and Cole Trinder really did keep the fire burning under the Asia-Pacific round that is held here in Canberra.
Yeah, mate, we sort of had a great lot of faith in the event. And we really believe that for the ACT government just to allow it to fade into insignificance was just not on. So Colin and I put a lot of effort in introducing the CTEC to a number of possible sponsors. They already had some connections, but I think basically we just put a fire under them and kept them moving.
Mm. Well, the Subaru 2001 Rally of Canberra is set to be another crowning glory in the Australian Capital Territories. Great rally tradition.
Yeah, mate, that's right. And I think everybody's really happy that Subaru have come on board. They've committed for 3 years, which means that we don't have to go through the heartache and the headaches that we've done in the last 2 months.
Mm. Now, Silverstone is going to be the official tyre manufacturer and official manufacturer supporting the series. And that's also good to see a Malaysian company pumping some money into the national capital as well.
Yes, it is. And I guess if nothing else, it's a company that has a lot of business in the Asia-Pacific region that's going to get the most out of the advertising from something like the Rally of Canberra, where most of the exposure is in the Asia region. Silverstone have actually now got naming rights to the Epic Super Special Stage, so that'll become the Silverstone Super Stage at Epic.
And, of course, has been one of the great influxes into the rally, and a great way of containing everyone and having a service point, a super special stage, and a focus of the event.
Yeah, at some stage during the negotiations that Colin and I had with the government, it was suggested that maybe the rally should run again next year in 2001 without running the Epic Super Stage. Our response to that was, look, you may as well forget the whole thing. If you're not going to run Epic, you may as well forget the whole thing, because Epic is what the event's all about now. It brings the service area, it brings the competitive stage to where people can actually sit in a grandstand where they can have something nice to eat, where they're not being choked in the dust. Not that that's not a good thing, but a lot of the people enjoy sitting in the grandstands a lot more.
Mm. And the other thing with this super special stage, Possum Bourne coming out and... Well, he didn't just congratulate the Super Special Stage. He came out and said this rally is one of the best in all of Asia-Pacific, if not the world, because no stage is more than 30 kilometres from the CBD.
That's correct, and that's the beauty of Canberra. One of the things that came out at the launch on Friday morning was that Canberra really is the heart of rallying in Australia. And as you say, you know, with no stage more than 30 kilometres from anywhere else, it really does work very well.
Now, the format for the event will still be held over 3 days?
It will still be 3 days. The Friday, Saturday and Sunday, all of those days finishing with a super special at Epic.
Now, normally at this time of year, the officials would be starting to be allocated positions and you'd already be working on the training regime, because a lot of people who go to the event might not realise just how much training and how much work is actually put in by the officials at each of the stages, and each stage commander has his own team that works under him to get this event ready. I guess now it's going to be a little bit of catch-up to get yourself back up to that normal position.
Yeah, usually we sort of have a roadbook, or the organisers have a roadbook put together by June, July, the road book hasn't even been, well, it is now started, and we now need definitely to have a road book completed by the end of January. We are probably 4 months behind the eight ball, and we're going to have to hit the ground running. There's a lot of work to be done, but I think we're all up to it. I think that the event means so much to most of us that we're all quite happy to put the effort in.
All right, for people who are listening to this and would like to be part of the Subaru Rally of Canberra, how can they get involved with the organising committee and say, I'd like to be a volunteer, I'd like to help out in some capacity?
Yeah, if they were to contact CTEC, Canberra Tourism and Events Corp, I'm sure that they can then be put through to the Rally of Canberra office. I don't have the phone number in my head at the moment, but... Or that's probably the best way to do it, is to contact CTEC, ask to speak to the rally office, and I'm sure that we'll be more than happy to have people give us a hand with the running of that event.
Well, Adrian, congratulations on yourself and Cole Trinder's continual hard work. It is great to see this event is now back in full focus and full swing, and look forward to catching up with yourself and all the tree dodgers as we get ready for what is going to be a very exciting 2001 Rally of Canberra.
Thank you very much for your interest, mate.
So make sure you pencil into your diaries for next year. The rally will be on from the 4th until the 6th of May 2001. And an additional part that we saw this year was the Impreza WRX Festival. There seem to be thousands of these wonderful cars driving around. They were here to spectate at the rally. They also had some driver training type events for themselves. So it's a great big meeting of a lot of car enthusiasts who are lucky enough to own an Impreza. So they'll be doing that again and for many years into the future. So that will be a bit of fun to watch, just the cars driving around on the streets as well as the magnificent racing cars in the forest.
I must admit that was one of the things that certainly struck me in terms of last year's Rally of Canberra was, as if it wasn't bad enough, you see them charging around the forest roads. Everywhere you looked, there were Subaru Imprezas and Subarus of various forms, including Foresters and so on, crawling out of the woodwork. They were everywhere.
Yeah, what fantastic marketing. Of course, Possum Bourne winning the rally definitely does help your marketing efforts as well. And, there really is a growing car club fraternity around these WRXs. They're a good-priced vehicle and great performance, so that's something that most people can really afford and have a lot of fun in.
And who Australians didn't know much about until probably February this year is Johnny Benson Jr., but anyone that follows short track racing in the Midwest certainly knew about you, ASA champion, and growing up through the Midwest racing. How much has that helped your later career out here in NASCAR?
Well, it's always helped, you know. I think that there's a lot of racers throughout the country that are great racers, and I've just had excellent opportunities to move on. And you, like I said, I run at a local track and ran very well, and then of course got into ASA and ran there for 4 years and was fortunate enough to win a championship. So, and then with that, opportunities come along to run in the Busch Grand National and then now win some cups.
Now racing in the Cup. We saw your car at Daytona in Australia, one of the few races we do actually get. It was completely white. The next moment it's with Lycos colours. The next time we see on TV, no sponsor again, and Benny Parsons and Ed Jarrett saying, this car's got no sponsor. We see in the next race, and they say, Johnny Benson has got a sponsor and a deal, but it's for 2001.
Yeah, it didn't really happened like that, but I mean not in the ways you guys saw it. I mean, we had Lycos on the car at Daytona 500. It was white, but I mean we just didn't have their paint scheme yet. And we ran that for just about half the season. Or actually half the season, and some things have happened there, and I'm not sure exactly what all happened there, but we weren't getting any money, so it was we needed to do something different. And by taking a name off the car, it was basically saying the car is open to get a sponsorship. And it got rough there for quite a while. We didn't have a sponsor. MB2, that owns Kenny Schrader's car, come along and purchased all the assets and the team. And with that, we won. So we've had every scenario that you can remotely think about this year. And it's been, you know, up and down. But we've had a good season. We've had good runs. And we're surely looking forward to the future.
Has it for yourself as a driver been very off-putting with these changes, or as a driver you don't notice that you turn up in your helmet and drive?
Well, mate, sure you notice it, but you know, we just try to go out and run the best we can and try to do the job that we need to do. And if we do our job right and we do it good, we figured that a sponsor would come along. So it was tough because we were on some financial stranglehold, I guess you could say, and it just, you know, just having good race cars, good people working with us, and being fortunate to have some really good runs, which in return ended up having some good finishes and a great opportunity for the year 2001.
Your father was a race driver. Does coming from a racing background make it a lot easier for you and to get into that mode and for the associations that you have to make later in life?
Well, that's always a plus, you know. I mean, I build a lot of race cars. My dad has a business. I build race cars and components, and it's just understanding the cars, understanding what goes into these cars, and building a lot of race cars is, I believe, a plus. So it's not just all about driving a race car, because you still got to understand them. You still got to know what to do to a race car, and there's a lot of things that go on. And so it has helped me in my situation. Maybe every driver's different, but in my position, it was definitely a huge plus.
Michigan seems to be a hotbed of talent.
We're not all out of Michigan, but I mean, it's in the Midwest up there. I think there's a lot of great racers up there. They, you know, Wisconsin, where a lot of good drivers come from, is, you know, they race every day of the week, you know, so they get a lot of racing experience in. And you know, where I grew up in Michigan, I only ran one night a week, and, you know, but there's good talent. You know, Butch Miller's from there, Ed Howell, Mike Eddy, and a lot of great guys that come out of that place. So it's just having good competition and being running on the lower, I wouldn't say lower levels, but on local levels, and having great race car drivers to run against, being very competitive, it really does, I guess, help you on a competitive edge, because if you can beat those guys, that's good. And I feel it's that way around the country, but for whatever reason up there in Michigan, you got some very highly competitive race drivers and race teams, and in, you know, Howe Racing and Port City Racing, and of course my dad and my dirt with both Howe and Port City, they build a lot of race cars, and so I mean, to get a good race car is just, you know, speaking of country-wise, it's just about just across the street. So everybody's got great equipment up there, and I think that makes it very competitive.
And obviously, you're really looking forward to 2001 Valvoline and that whole deal. In that period in the middle of the year where things were up and down, did you lose any key staff, or were you able to keep all the fellas together?
We kept everybody together. That's what I like about this group of guys. They're very supportive. They love their racing. They want to work hard. They want to win. And even going through the rough times, you really can't tell a difference between the guys at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and right now. They're all the same. I mean, we've been through a lot, but we did it all together. Nobody really threatened, well, I'm going to leave if we don't have a sponsor. Everybody says, man, we'll go down with the ship if we have to. And I think that was a huge key to some of our success, is everybody getting along so good together. Everybody, you know, just working together hard, working good together, whether it be bad times or good times. And that's a big plus.
One thing that's said about you is you haven't forgotten your roots, and when you look at the people you have around you, you still have someone like Rob Albright, who was an amazing man in the ASA, probably knew every statistic for a long period of time that ever happened in the ASA.
Yeah, I mean, he still does some stuff for me, and, you know, on the public relations side and business side, and he takes care of a lot of the licensing stuff that I do, and it's been great to be able to have somebody help us with that deal, with somebody that I've known for a long time. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and like I said, I mean, there's just so many great people throughout all the racing that I've done, a lot of great fans, and it's kind of cool to still have some of the same fans that I've had for a long time, and you know, we've got a lot of new fans too, and I think that's always neat to have.
Yeah, Johnny Benson there from the USA, from NASCAR. But of course, the driver here in Australia whose name is now on everyone's lips, the man who has got himself the second spot with the Holden Racing Team, is Jason Brighton. Jason joins us on the line now. Jason, you must be pretty happy with securing what would probably be one of the most sought-after race seats in touring cars in Australia.
Yeah, I am, Craig. You know, it's not very often that an opportunity like this one comes up, and, although I had to sort of shelve my American plans, I can't complain about, you know, where I've ended up.
Now, you're obviously still hoping the possibilities there of at least doing the kart race up at Honda Indy next year?
Yeah, you know, we've really just got to see how things progress during the year. There's a number of factors that, you know, need to be considered for that drive. You know, number one obviously being, you know, is the funding there, you know, the full funding there to do it again next year, and number two, is a team available to do it? Not forgetting that, you know, I don't want to jeopardise anything I'm doing in the Shell series, you know, seeing as that is my number one focus at the moment.
Mm. Now, of course, you've had the opportunity to have a brief run in one of the HRT Commodores. They find a lot of testing. How did you find it stepping over from previously running in the Ford Falcon?
Yeah, I think, you know, they've obviously both got their good points. You know, it was good to finally get a taste of a Commodore again. You know, the only other time I'd ever driven the Commodore was in my first ever racing V8 supercars back in Tasmania. So, you know, the Ford is strong in some areas and the Holden's strong in other areas. And at the end of the day, they do the same lap time, but you know, it's sort of a catch 22. So. You know, I'm really happy with the way the car went the other day. You know, our next test day is scheduled for late January, and you know, we can get stuck into it then.
Mm. Now, in terms of your plans, HRT is based down in Melbourne. Are you planning to sort of move to Melbourne or relocate to Melbourne to be close to them?
Yeah, I'll be moving down there late January. You know, that's pretty important. You know that I'm based near the team. Not only because, you know, I intend on sort of spending a bit of time in the workshop and, you know, getting to know everybody best possible as soon as possible, but also, you know, a lot of the promotional activities and everything we do down there, and if I'm up and down the country all the time, you know, it's for no use.
Mm. It's probably one of the most high-profile teams too in terms of its promotional activities, in terms of doing things with the Holden dealers and the like.
Yeah, it is. You know, I know how hard Craig and Mark have worked in the past with all that, and you know, it's going to be a big year for me. I've had a bit of a year off in some ways from a lot of that stuff running Indy Lights in America, but you know, I'm straight back into it and straight back into the you know, the hard work of one of the hardest working teams out there.
Mm. Yeah, in your case, you're sort of stepping into a team too, where that Mark Scaife has got himself set up as the champion driver from this season. How hard do you think it's going to be to try and sort of get in there and challenge for the championship against him next year?
Yeah, I'm sort of going in with an open mind. I think, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to be competitive with him. Obviously, you know, he understands, you know, the team and the way the car works better than me, because he's been there for three seasons now. But, you know, it shouldn't take us too long to, you know, to get a handle on all of that. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sure we'll be getting equal equipment and, you know, we're looking good.
Mm. Compared to the teams you've run with in the past, for example, Stone Brothers, Dick Johnson Racing, what do you think is probably the biggest difference you'll probably notice stepping into HRT?
I think, you know, some of it, you know, will probably just be the database they've got. You know, they've got, you know, a lot of experience and you know, at the end of the day, they're not that different to a lot of the other teams. You know, there's certainly an aura around Holden Racing Team, but, you know, they don't do things a lot differently. With the way the V8 supercar rules are structured these days, you know, it's designed, you know, so it doesn't matter how much money you've got, you know, that you can't really use it that much more effectively. You know, there's a limit on testing. It's not as they go out and test twice as much as anybody anymore. There's a limit on the amount of tyres you can, so it's not as though every time you go out testing you've got new tyres to run on the car. You know, it's all about using that money effectively still.
Mm. And it could probably, no doubt, one of the key priorities between now and the first race of next season is to get the Jason Bright HRT range of clothing and memorabilia ready as well.
Yeah, there's obviously going to be you know, some HRT Jason Bright merchandise out there, but I don't think too many of my Ford fans will be buying it.
Have you had much of a reaction from the Ford fans? I know I've got one here that wants to jump down the throat and say, what have you done?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I'm disappointed to be leaving Ford as well. You know, but I think that the days of, you know, where the drivers were sponsored by the manufacturer are gone. In the past, you know, Dick Johnson and Peter Brock and Glenn Seaton and all those guys that have owned their own team, they were the ones getting the manufacturer support. So, you know, of course they're not going to change brands, but, you know, these days it's a little bit different. You know, there's 20 guys out there that are pretty much just employed racing drivers these days, and although I'm the first to change camps, you know, I won't be the last, and I'm sure you'll see it more and more down the road. But you know, I certainly, it was on my mind. I had a good couple of years with Ford. I was given my first opportunity in V8 supercars by Holden at Gary Rogers, and you know, a lot of people seem to forget that.
There is a perspective out there that Ford have got a bit of the red mist. They see Craig Lowndes out and a free agent this year, and there's a lot of people who are fans, Ford fans, going, maybe they're too busy trying to get Craig Lowndes into a Ford. They're letting a few of their good drivers who they already had secured out from under their guard.
Yeah, I think in some ways that may have been the case. I think you know, from you know, even just from the outside, you know, you can see that Holden do look after their drivers a little bit more in some ways, and you know, Ford probably haven't done as good a job at securing a lot of the younger drivers and looking after them as what Holden have in the past. But you know, that you know, none of that really weighed into what, you know, my decision was. You know, my decision, you know, I as you know, I've had overseas aspirations, and I worked very hard to do Indy Lights this year. And you know, the decision to come back here was one that I took very seriously. And driving for Holden Racing Team will give me a lot of security that I haven't had before, and it was an opportunity that none of the Ford teams could offer me at the moment.
Mm. And I would imagine HRT, they have, it's sort of like a job for life, isn't it? It's a public service job where you think of HRT and you think of a lot of very long-standing drivers. You think of Brock, you think of Harvey, you think of people like that who had very long careers with that manufacturer and with that team.
Yeah, for sure. You know, at the end of the day, you know, there is a certain security with Holden Racing Team, and you know, it's something that, you know, I just haven't had in the past, and you know, that I've still got overseas aspirations. Driving for Holden Racing Team will certainly raise my profile, and you know, one day I hope to return back overseas and you know, not have to do it as tough as what I did this time.
Well, Jason Bright, thanks very much for joining us on Inside Motorsport this evening, and no doubt we'll probably keep track of things as they develop for you through testing and lead up to the first round of the Shell Championship next year with your move to the Holden Racing Team.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you. Okay, joining us now is the man from V8X magazine, the editor, Neville Wilkinson. And Neville, the latest edition is out now, I believe.
Yes, well, it's currently going all over Australia. It's supposedly out in Melbourne now, and it's going to be on sale in Sydney on Wednesday, and the rest of Australia is going to be on sale on Friday next week. Well, that's what the distributors assure me, so I've got no reason not to believe them.
And it's not like the distributors would sell you up the river?
No, never.
Now, what are we going to expect to see in this last edition of V8X?
Well, this copy of V8X, or this issue, is our batter special, basically. It's going to be thicker than last time. There's more pages in it last time. That's why it is thicker. And it's basically centred around batters. Funny about that. And it's just got a lot more photographs. We found out a lot of the punters out there who bought it and they got back to me, said that they wanted to see more photos. And so we've accommodated them, and we've given them like an extra 30 pages for this issue than on the last one, and 26 of those pages are just all Bathurst photographs and a couple of stories and stuff like that.
Mm. It seems to be the thing that the punters are after, is they're all looking for a photo of their favourite driver and their favourite car.
Well, I just find that a lot of the people that purchase the magazine and also that look at the vadx.com.au website, they're all passionate about the sport, you know. And a lot of people have got back to me and said, this is fantastic, you know, nothing but V8 supercar, bring it on, we want more, when's the next issue out, da-da-da-da, so on and so on. And we're just like, well, how good is this, you know? All we need to do is let the whole of Australia know that this thing's out on the shelf, and it should be a winner.
Yeah, this one should be a real winner, because we believe you've got a pretty exclusive story lined up.
Can't keep nothing from you, can we?
We have our spies.
We've got an exclusive interview with Craig Lowndes. We actually sent a journalist, talked to Craig, And we basically fired all the hard questions at him. We said, you know, what are you doing? Da 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 da. And, you know, why did you leave HRT? And all those questions around that. And, he answers them in the interview. I mean, you know, he's still pretty cagey because he still hasn't decided who he's driving with. And we are. So you're going Ford or Holden. And, it's quite an interesting answer, actually.
And of course, the name of the game is that there's even a bit of a story behind which journalist did the interview as well.
Well, yeah, we actually managed to secure the services of Paul Gover, the motoring journalist down here for the Herald Sun. So we're pretty rapt about that because, you know, he's quite a respected journalist and it's a good read. It's a question and answer story. And basically, we just said, well, we'll unedit this. We'll just, you know, questions, answers. I mean, yeah, let's warts and all, the whole thing, you know, and Paul Gover asked some really good questions.
Yeah, he has been known to ask a few curly ones to get the drivers and various team officials' eyes bugging out at occasions during press conferences.
Well, you know, like I said, he's one of the, one of the heavy hitters in Australian motoring, so, you know, it's a bit of a feather in our cap, actually, for Paul Gover to actually do it, and we organised that, actually, interview at Bathurst. And he jumped at the chance. I think he's also trying to find out what Craig was doing himself, so it worked well.
And, of course, that'll be the thing that now will develop probably between this issue and the next issue, is actually where Craig Lowndes ends up. And, of course, there's so many different rumours flying around about where he could end up.
Well, that's the thing. See, when we first... I mean, the issue deadline was a couple of weeks ago, right? It's been printed and all that, and it's, the distribution takes about 2 weeks from before it goes to the printers to getting to the shelf. And we think, oh, no, is Craig going to announce it before the actual magazine gets out on the shelf? And that was one of our concerns. But, you know, there's nothing we could do about it. So we just had to live with it if he did announce, but it just so happens that he hasn't announced. And, I mean, I'm not expecting anything personally before Christmas, and that's not insider information. That's just a personal opinion, because I just reckon it's the whole thing's so messy with HRT saying that he's still being going to be managed through them, and just the whole shit fight, so to speak, with that. And you can't get into a lot of what's going on because Craig and all the people involved aren't saying anything except from what HRT releases or what Craig Lowndes will tell you and stuff like that, and it's not a lot. It just, you know, so no one knows. I mean, on our website, we've got a thing, who do you think he's going to go to, Ford or Holden? Not who do you want to, but who do you think? And it's 50-50. Everybody out there has got their own opinion, but in the end of the day, I think he's going to surprise a few people, including me.
Yeah, it always seems to be the thing you least expect is what comes out and bites you.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and I was listening to the interview with Jason Bright. I mean, you said that the question was asked, you know, maybe Ford had dropped the ball or kept focusing on Craig and dropped the ball with Jason. And that came up, that theory came up to me as well. Someone said that to me. Maybe, you know, Ford trying to hedge everything to try and get Craig, and may have let Jason, well, slip through their fingers, so to speak. I mean, because there are a few pretty feral Ford fans out there at the moment saying, oh, you know, damn that, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, Jason's a pretty good steerer, and I think it was a good choice for HRT and a bit of a coup by Holden.
Yeah, and Holden, obviously, in doing that, they've looked at potentially the balance that they need within the team with both Mark Scaife and another driver who can be complementary to each other in terms of driving styles and their potential audience in terms of the public.
Well, that's true, and also with Jason, he's fairly high profile. Also, they've got their driver choice out of the way. Now those guys can get on with doing a bit of testing, getting ready for next year. I mean, that's another big thing. Craig might announce, you know, he could announce before Christmas, but that's, well, you know, time is marching on. And if he announces after Christmas, after New Year's, they really don't have a lot of time to get team together, unless he goes to the established team. But there's talk, hey, if he goes to a new team, how long is it going to take to get that team together, and is it going to be rushed coming into the first round for next year? I mean, are they really going to be on the ball from the very start? I mean, look at John Bowe. The Cat team had a lot of troubles with their first year, especially early in the season.
One of the little ironies that I particularly enjoy is the fact that there was so much fuss about Craig Lowndes racing at the Adelaide in the Race of 1,000 Years, and of course Craig's replacement at HRT happens to be racing in that very race.
Yeah, I kind of hear broke up then.
Yeah, it's relation to the fact that Craig Lowndes didn't get the run at the Race of 1,000 Years, and who should end up in the seat but Jason Bright?
I know, and haven't we all thought of that? And like he's partnering an ex-HRT driver, in Murphy. So it's just like, what's going on here, you know? But obviously, yeah, it's crazy. Ironic, as you said. I mean, what more can you say? I mean, I don't know, maybe... This is the thing, you know. People are emailing me saying, you know, maybe it's HRT with Sarah Graves. Everybody's got their own opinion on what's happening. No one really knows except HRT and Craig Lowndes. But a few people are looking at this going, you know, what's going on? You know, this just isn't right. You know, why didn't they let him race and all that kind of stuff? But, I mean, HRT have got their reasons and they're sticking to their guns.
Yeah. Now, anything else of great joy and interest we'll find in this latest issue of V8X, particularly?
All good stuff from last time. We had great feedback from everybody. It's just, like I said, more pages. Still got the V8 Supergirl. We had the bunch of the Calendar Girls in the middle. This time we've got a bit of an expose on one of them. We've got a feature on all up on top of the mountain, actually. I mean, what it was like this year, and it just so happened to be a pretty tough year on top of the mountain. Basically, just more photos, an extra grid girl section, a babe watch. We've got two babe watches. That was one of the most popular things. A bit of a preview on next year's championship, both the Konica and the Shell Series. And we've also got a Paul Radisich feature on the Rat, and it just so happened that we actually put that feature together before he won at Sandown, and it was lucky because he was the only Ford driver to actually win an outright round this year.
Well, Neville, sounds like there's lots for us to keep our eyes open for when the last issue of V8X magazine hits the stands any day now.
Well,
for us.
Great Christmas reading, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
You know, help us over that long break when nothing's really out there.
Well, that was part of it, you know. It was going to be the Bathurst bumper issue. Last issue was 68 pages. This one is 100 pages. So, you know, it's going to be a great read. Well, it is a great read.
Neville Wilkinson, thanks very much for joining us on Inside Motorsport this evening.
See you later, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd say that's going to be our good reading over Christmas, New Year.
Well, one of them.
One of them, because we've also got Motorsport News.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the other
Friday.
Thing. Yeah, and the other thing, supposedly into the bookshops before Christmas, air freight and fingers crossed, of course, is the Bible for Formula One followers auto course for this year. We're sort of all praying towards Mecca and the United Kingdom that it will make its way over here rapidly. No doubt our good friend Duncan at Checkered Flag Bookshop will have that one in time if it's there. That's always a good read for the Formula One fans. Of course, the big news this week, the man has announced he's leaving Formula One.
Muddy talker himself.
The muddly talker, Murray Walker. I tell you what, it won't be the same without him, will it?
No. Having to endure US based commentary of the Formula One season for the last few years, or did Canada, you were blessed with English speakers?
In Canada, they had their own Canadian commentators, which is the Canadian equivalent of the ABC, and they try to get excited about it, but it's just not the same as Murray, who could get excited about such a boring race.
Mm. And Murray could even get excited about a British driver who was in the middle of the field, or the back of the field, who looked
having
like he was doing
a 15-second pit stop.
Yeah, Murray could get excited about that. But of course, you're giving somebody like good old days Nigel Mansell, and he could go. Well, a number of times there, I reckon they must have had the cardiac arrest team standing ready. But anyhow, we've got a story here from Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC regarding the departure of Murray Walker from the Formula One commentary team.
Murray, Sterling, Damon, no surname necessary. Fame, recognition and affection all rolled into one. Add energy, enthusiasm, knowledge, humour and a God-given voice for motor racing and you have one of the world's best-known commentators who's been behind a microphone since 1949. Initially that was for BBC Radio with his father in a unique broadcasting partnership. Then for BBC Television and for the last 4 years with ITV. His early career in advertising, coining the slogan, "A Mars a day helps you work, rest and play," inevitably took a back seat. Murray's rapport with the drivers and team owners is unique. Many of them, like Nigel Mansell and Damon, with whom he recorded a memorable TV advert, are good friends. His absence from the commentary box in France last season was noted almost as much as David Coulthard's victory, and his farewell tour around the globe in 2001 is certain to generate just as much attention.
Yeah, Murray Walker, a man. Actually, that was one of the great things that our Adelaide correspondent and myself, Dave Langfield, had the joy of being able to say. We've told Murray where to go. When he came out to Bathurst in 1997 for Super Touring Bathurst, Murray Walker, of course, was part of the commentary team for that event. They brought him out because of all the British touring car drivers involved in the event. And we arrived there on the, I think it was the Wednesday afternoon, we'd signed in, gone to the media centre and wandering around pit lane. And along came Murray Walker over the bridge, and he's sort of looking around, and he said, can we help you? And he said, can you tell me where the media centre is? So we immediately then told Murray where to go to find the media centre. So we could say, we've told Murray Walker where to go.
Very politely, I hope.
Oh, it was very polite, actually. We were almost sort of down on our knees doing the famous We Are Not Worthy routine. But no, actually, he's a very interesting guy. He's one of the few commentators who, part of his routine, and he did this at Bathurst a couple of times, he was there, and he also apparently does it at every Formula One race meeting, is on the first couple of days, he goes out and he goes up and down the pit lane to each of the pit bays, talking to the drivers, talking to the team managers and so on. He also goes up and down the pit lane, getting his eye in on the cars in terms of their colour schemes and what they look like and the rest. And the other thing that he does, he always makes sure that he at least gets to go round the circuit in either one of the course cars or with one of the drivers, usually preferably with one of the drivers, to talk through the circuit. In the case of the first time he went around with Peter Brock, and he's been around with Brad Jones and quite a few other drivers around Bathurst. But he does that so that he has a perspective of the circuit, and apparently does the same with the Formula One tracks. Even though those he's been to year after year, he always does that with one of the drivers who's been there the previous year, because if they've made, say, a change to part of the kerb or the camber of a corner, something like that, he then has that information if he's actually at the track. Of course, if he doesn't go to the track, it's one of the ones they're doing remote. Different story.
So that's what we have to do, scam a ride with someone.
We've been trying that for years. But other news, of course, the signing of Marcus Ambrose with Stone Brothers Racing to take over the Pertec Falcon from Craig Baird, and we're lucky enough to catch up with him a little bit earlier today.
One of the many drivers who has picked up a new drive in the V8 supercars is Marcus Ambrose, and Marcus decided to come home from Europe, and I guess looking forward to a top-flight drive in the V8 supercars for next year.
Yeah, thanks. It's going to be very exciting, actually. It's going to be a new thing for me to drive a touring car style machine. You know, I've been a single-seater driver for the last 5 years. So, it's a real change of direction as far as driving is concerned, and I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Mm. For racing over in Europe, as you have been doing, it's very cutthroat, so you're not going to be afraid to mix it with the drivers. As we saw, the Europeans don't mind getting involved in any action on the racetrack.
Yeah, I went to Europe because that's where the best drivers are, and that's where the best teams and the best opportunity is to try and reach Formula One, and that's why I was across there. It's a proving ground, and quite often if you had a bad qualifying and you're back in, say, 25th or 30th place, Formula 4, Formula 3, whatever, you're fighting tooth and nail, as if it's the last race you're ever going to do, and it's just because of the depth over there, and everybody that thinks they're good tends to end up across there and tries to be the best, and that's why European racing is such a good breeding ground.
Mm. For yourself now, coming home, setting yourself back up on the Gold Coast, and really a new challenge for yourself.
Yeah, everything's different, for the first time I don't have to try and raise budget to keep going, which is great. I've got a great bunch of guys behind me with Stone Brothers Racing, and they've seen, they've chosen me for a reason, and hopefully they'll see why, and they have seen why in the testing so far. And Ford also, Ford were very proactive in trying to get me back here in Australian touring cars. And it's a brand new thing, so, I'm learning as I go along, and it's a different category, a different form of racing. And sure, it's success is going to come with a bit more experience, so you can't be asking for outright race victory straight away. But as long as I keep learning and progressing, I'll be very happy.
Does this put an end to your hopes of an open wheel career, or do you still see opportunities once V8 supercars might give you in other divisions, perhaps in different areas of open wheelers?
To be very honest, I went across to Europe to try and make Formula One and to try and be the best in single seater racing, because it's the purest form. The cars are built to go quickly, as a touring car is a road car transformed into a race car. So, as a purist, I was chasing single seaters, but that is gone, and I'm not going to look at that again. I chose to come back here to do Australian V8 racing, I could have stayed in Europe or tried to go to America or Japan to continue single seaters, but I've drawn a line and my future isn't Australia, and it's doing V8 Supercar racing for the, you know, for the foreseeable future. I've got no aspirations to go back over and try and do Formula 3 or 3000 again. I know where I stand against other drivers, you know, drivers that have gone through to Formula 1. I've achieved my personal satisfaction by being over there and actually making it as far as Formula 3. And that's enough for me.
Mm. Now, the challenge ahead, all the tracks that you're going to be racing on with the V8 Supercars, have you been able to have much experience with them, or is it really your Formula Ford you'll be drawing on knowing the track because of what you'd done in Formula Ford before you left?
Yeah, it's really just what I've done before I left was Australian Formula Ford, and we did a few tracks. I think we did 8 tracks, and about 7 of those we use now. So, I know quite a few circuits, as in the line, but really the circuits isn't an issue for me at all. I've gone to places where I've had 5 laps to before qualifying, and have managed to put the thing on the front row. It's what you do over in Europe as well. You have to maximise the time available, and if there's no time before qualifying, just to make sure you're ready for qualifying. So, I've learnt new tracks very quickly because I've had to, and I don't see any problem in learning tracks. What I see a problem with is being comfortable with the car, knowing what I want from the car, and knowing what to change when there is a problem. You know, like it's that's where the experience is going to come from, is when I've had a problem on the car or a handling problem, and I fixed it at somewhere else, I can draw back that information when it happens again. Yeah, but when it happens the first time, of course, I don't know anything about it. So that's where experience is going to come into it. I have to be at one with the car, and when I'm at one with the car, then I'll be quick.
Mm. So yourself and the team testing that you've already done, how comfortable do you feel inside the car? And is it quite an experience to all of a sudden have all the roof and windows around you?
It's different, but it still is a race car, and you've got to pound the thing around to try and go as quick as you can. I feel very comfortable in the car. I feel that I've blended in well with the team, and the type of car it is. It's a very challenging car for a driver. So I believe that I can make a bit of a difference here to the team and to push the car forward and to try and get it to another level. I'm very excited about the testing we've done so far. I'm very happy with it. I think the Stone Brothers are very happy with it as well. But it's very early days yet. There's a lot to learn, and I've only been at Queensland Raceway. We head off to Calder Park tomorrow and do some running, and then we're off to Eastern Creek. So the more tracks I get under my belt, in the sense that, different types of corners and different styles of handling of the car, the better off I'm going to be. But the cockpit itself, once you do 4 or 5 laps, it's no different to anything else.
Mm. And sponsorship-wise, of course, the Stone Brothers have been very good at getting good sponsorship packages together. How about your car? What livery will it be wearing, and what number will you be running in under?
It'll be the number 4 Pertec car. Pertec are coming on for another year. They've been active in the last 3 years in Australian V8 car racing, and they're going to go again. They want a bit better run than they had last year. So fingers crossed, I can deliver some good results for them.
And joining us on the line now from Motorsport News, another great Christmas read about to hit the newsstand. Phil Brannigan, welcome to the show.
Gee, what a lot of pressure. I hope it's going to be a great Christmas read. Thanks very much.
Well, you've got the almanac, you've got...
Not yet, almanac in New Year.
Oh, okay. All right, well, what have we got in the Christmas one then, without me preempting any more?
I tell you, we've got the F1 review. No, we haven't. We've got the V8 review. That's right. Which is the one Mark Scaife won? So both red and they start with MS. Oh, Michael Schumacher. It's the V8 review. And we've also got a quiz. First time we've ever had a reader's quiz. And of course...
Well, that might say something, that with the new format, you've got smarter readers.
Well, certainly the staff isn't any smarter, that's for sure. And of course, we're all wearing black armbands because Murray Walker's retiring.
Yes, we just heard from Jonathan Ledyard about that. And did you know he coined the phrase, a Mars a day helps you work, rest and play?
Not only that, but he also made the phrase, an only budgie is a lonely budgie. Yes, of course, Murray Walker used to own one of Britain's most successful advertising companies and sold his shirt some years ago and was very, very successful. And now he's hanging up the microphone as well.
Well, we get the first stop on his Riva Dirty Tour, if I can steal something from Mario Andretti. And it should make for
A little bit more focus on the race, and we've got a quote that we're going to play a little bit later on from Bobby Rahal, which you might have heard when he was up at the Gold Coast talking about the difference between the show that CART puts on and the show Formula One puts on.
Well, I guess Jeff Bradley explained it to me a couple of years ago. He said Formula One is a technical exercise and CART is a, or Champ Car Racing now, is a racing series. So I guess you'd have to say in Formula One, a lot of the decisions are already made by the time the cars leave the factory, and it's only kind of when something silly happens, like rain or snow or earthquake, that something out of the ordinary occurs and someone different wins.
Mm. Now, of course, the big thing is, in terms of this issue of motorsport news coming up, is no doubt you'll be on the latest on the trail in terms of where to now for Craig Lowndes.
Well, I forget we're the ones who said he was staying at HRT. As we sit here, we still don't know, though the field is starting to narrow and there are some interesting things going on this week, so we'll certainly bring you all the news about that. And there could be some other changes going on out there, of course, Mark Larkin with his Mitre 10 deal going west, and what's Mark Larkin going to do for 2001?
Mm. And of course, we were talking to Jason Bright earlier about his HRT signing, and of course, for him, that's a major move.
It certainly is a major move, and am I the only one who thinks it's ironic that HRT's Jason Bright is going to drive for Panos, where HRT's Craig Lowndes was not allowed to?
Yeah, we're all mentioning the irony of that and saying, OK, where's all you X-File conspiracy fans out there?
Well, I don't know whether that makes me Mulder or you Scully, but certainly it is an unusual one. HRT have put their case forward, and there are people out there who have been contacting Motorsport News to ask us to ask why it happened. And let's just say that those people remain unconvinced about the explanation.
Is it because you're asking why it happened that they released the news this week rather than next about Bright?
You're obviously in the same position as me.
Yes, I thought that was a bit ironic myself.
Yeah, we contacted HRT about the announcement for their second driver. We're being told it was being announced tomorrow morning, which fitted well with our schedule. It was not. It was announced selectively last Tuesday. And it's HRT's perfect right to do that, but it's also our perfect right not to necessarily agree that it's the right thing to do.
Mm. And when we're talking about series that you're covering, of course, the race of 1,000 years over there in Adelaide is one that you'll be featuring in on. Scotty Palmer, the fellas here might not have seen the Sunday Herald Sun, but I spoke to Howard Cotton this morning, and he was letting me in on a tip that they had quite an interesting punchline with Scotty Palmer today, and well, he hit the nail once again on the head. There's one female competitor, and who do you think Scotty Palmer had full-page photos of?
Oh, this is the young lady from Venezuela. Yeah.
And I wouldn't even try to say a name.
Mate, I wouldn't try and say a name either. But
you're going to interview her, aren't you? Yeah, that's right. But, yeah, definitely not hard on the eyes.
Well, I guess, it's more obvious in motor racing because motor racing is a sport dominated by men, and the women that are in it, some of them are not fantastic looking, and when you get a gorgeous young lady like this one whose name escapes me, or somebody like Melinda Price who's extremely attractive, I mean, it stands out. And I don't know about you guys, but I like looking at attractive women, and if a photo appears in Motorsport News, I think most of the readers like it too.
Now, one of the other items, of course, which crossed our desk earlier today is the fact that Audi have decided to put a fairly radical paint scheme on one of their Audis they're going to be running down there, painted up as a Crocodile Dundee Audi.
Yeah, I guess you can do those sorts of things for your race cars when you've already won the championship. Those wacky, zany guys from Audi have just been slapping the lederhosen over that one, and yeah, we'll have pictures of it this week, but it certainly looks different, and I wonder if they'd have done that if the championship had been on the line.
Mm. And of course, all Mr. McNish has to do is turn up and drive to ensure that he keeps it.
And then bugger off the Toyota in Formula One.
Yeah, which is a tough thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, they won't be paying you very well, will they?
But at least he's got somewhere to go next year, which is a guarantee of something.
Yeah, true. And actually, Alan McNish is a very good... he's actually got a very good test driving record in Formula One with Benetton and McLaren. He was the first person to drive a V12 Honda-powered McLaren.
Mm. So, what other goodies should we expect in this next issue of Motorsport News coming up in terms of reports from races? Will you be no doubt reporting on your latest trip down to Tasmania?
Yes, and that was on TV this afternoon on Channel 7. Well, for the first one I've actually seen this season because there hasn't been a race on against it. And, yeah, some good racing down there between Owen Kelly and Paul Morris. Also in the future touring ranks, a classic fairy tale story for Tim Shaw after having the car dusted in the morning warm-up. Came back like a train. The other thing we're keeping an eye on, of course, is F1 testing. Benetton ran three drivers in F1 testing last week, none of whom were Mark Webber. And they went very, very quickly, and it looks like you may have seen reports that this new Renault engine is a dud and not reliable. Those reports were all wrong. This new Renault engine is an absolute beast, and mark my words, Benetton will be one of the teams to watch in 2001.
At this point, Mark Webber goes out with a very large axe handle and breaks the kneecaps of one of the team drivers.
Doesn't have to, because he's having his knee operated on next week.
Well, what
do you mean
goes out? Because
Fizzy's
already
had
his work done,
isn't he? Well, of course, there's more drivers than just Fizzy to worry about. Button's there, of course, running unbranded until January the 1st, when he's free of his commitments to BMW and Williams. I never understand why that happens. And now they've got this guy Alonso from Formula 3000, who is owned and managed by Briatore, and he has gone extraordinarily fast in his first proper F1 test with Benetton. So I would say that Benetton is getting themselves in the Williams situation. They've got a lot of drivers and they're all good.
It's a terrible situation to be in if you're a Formula 1 team manager, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I suppose. You know, it's like a driver doesn't perform, you just stand there and go, next! And someone marches forward.
Now, the current issue that's out has the famous words on the cover, Brock back. And, of course, this is one of the great rumours of all time, isn't it? So the Brock-Harrop-Lowndes connection. And as a front-page cover, I'm sure it's guaranteed you'd probably bump your sales up by 50% just by having that famous words, Brock, back on the cover.
Well, it never actually occurred to us that that might happen. No, Peter Brock said, hey, this is what the situation is. We've got this team. We spoke to Ron Harrop. He said, yep, the space is there available. If you put the names Brock and Lowndes on a Holden team, it will rain money. Sponsors will buy and fall over themselves to get on board, and it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen. There are some other things in the equation now for Craig Lowndes. It's up to him to sort those out, him and his management. But if it was to happen, just imagine the merchandising, Brock and Lowndes at Holden. It'd be huge.
Well, we've got another story here that obviously is probably one of the things that could be of interest, and Peter will throw this one to you.
Yeah, one little story that came across some of the news wires during the week was the North Carolina couple that left two children at a Florida hotel while they went to a NASCAR race, and they've ended up being sentenced to 6 months in jail.
Yeah, they've been chucked in the pokey, and rightly so, one would say on the face of it, for abandoning their kiddies. The postscript of the version I wrote of that, which was an AP story, was that the previous week the mother admitted she'd taken one of the children, one of whom was 8 and one of whom was 5, with them in the car when she concluded a drug deal. Didn't say whether she was buying or selling. Don't think that's really important. Drugs are illegal. Going to the races is not illegal. But abandoning your kiddies, 8 and 5... buy a swimming pool in a motel to go and watch a NASCAR race. Hey, I like NASCAR as much as anybody else, but I'm not going to abandon my two kids to go and see a race.
Yeah, the biggest trouble is these days is where they won't let you take the kids on the track.
That's right. It's terrible. I mean, they could have taken them to the race and, you know, left them in the car in the car park, but...
The next thing I have to do is I have to get on to dear old Tony Cochran and ask him if he can set up a crash at each of the racetracks for us motoring journalists who have children, so that we can, you know, devote more time to covering the events.
That would be a good use for the media centre at Bathurst, wouldn't it?
Great. Yeah.
Isn't it already? With some of the people in there acting like babies.
Wait a minute. Hang on, who are you referring to?
Well, present company excluded.
Present company accepted. Thank you.
All right, Motorsport News, it is going to be a great Christmas read. It comes out right in time for all us public servants to have 3 days off.
And we'll be working all the way through bringing you the New Year's issue, don't worry about that.
And we look forward to the almanac. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to hopefully try and find between now and next week last year's edition which contained the almanac and see how many of those predictions came true.
None, I don't think. Oh, I might have got one race winner right, but this year's almanac is currently being looked at by solicitors and...
Now, you got a few right because you kept on bagging Perkins and look what happened to him at the end of the year.
But he owns the team. He's got more money than I have. And he's got a helicopter. I was right. I had him in an aircraft last year, but he actually went out and bought a helicopter.
Well, that's good enough. It's aviation, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah. And, of course, the Super Tourers, Channel 7, for all their criticism about what was happening... Oh, this is a story. For all Channel 7's criticism about what they did with the football and so on and so forth, the summer series of the Super Touring cars has been extremely well put together. And when you think there's, 14 cars on the grid?
Mm-hmm.
They're filling out 2 hours with DTM, British Touring Car stuff, which
sure, it might be a little bit out of date, but just to see the cars on the track is a lot better than the 30 seconds you get in a news report from time to time. And I have to say, I reckon they're doing a damn good job.
Well, I have to say also, and I say this with a caveat that I'm an official in the Soka series, because I do the series commentary, they are doing a good job. The $400 million has just been paid for rugby league by Fox Sports. If the AFL deal excludes Seven, what will they do? All they'll have left is the Olympics and rugby. They might go and do motor racing, and they might go and do it in a way that we haven't seen it before, and wouldn't that be great?
Well, that's the thing, because if the football television deal comes off for the Foxtel 9 and 10 bid, Channel 9 has a policy that nothing is more important than their core programming, meaning that Saturday nights, Sunday nights, football will not be shown. It means Sundays, if they've got rugby league, which they've got a commitment to, then AFL is going to be sort of early game Sunday, rugby league's going to be late game Sunday on Channel 9. Where are they going to palm off the other compulsory non-siphon free-to-air games? They're going to Channel 10.
Oh, is that right?
Rugby, Aussie rules football will be on Channel 10 if Channel 9 get the free-to-air rights. There'll be a combination of a 9-10 merger where core programs at 9 will not shift from hell or high water, which is 60 minutes, and their new service, and bits and pieces like that, then mean that the bid says that Channel 10 will show the product. Now, what does that do to the home of motorsport? Because if someone's going to pay what I was talking to people about, $100 million, okay, you've got to believe that they're going to show a football game before motor racing. And Channel 10 could be bit by the same syndrome that 7 did. There's a story for Thursday.
Possibly so. And you can kiss live telecast of the Japanese and Malaysian Grand Prix next year goodbye if Nine are showing their core programming, because look how much trouble they got in this year.
Yeah, but if you've got Foxtel, you get to watch it live without all the crap and the 30-second ads that the Brits enjoy.
In Formula 1?
Yep.
Have Foxtel actually done a Formula 1 deal?
They are in a contract negotiation with Channel 9 now.
Ah.
Because of the anti-siphoning laws, it will be a situation where if 9 don't want to show it, Foxtel will immediately pick it.
Well, won't that be interesting? Hey, I want the Foxtel.
Okay, Bart. Phil.
Yeah, Phil Brangan, thanks very much. We'll probably catch up with you next week or so. We'll even catch up with you next week to review the bumper pre-Christmas edition of Motorsport News. And otherwise, see how things are going for your Christmas and New Year.
All right. Have a good one.
Will do. Thanks very much, Phil Brannigan.
And, of course, it is a great reading. Right throughout the Christmas period, as I destroy the panel from the opposite side. Isn't it good how I can not even be in front of the panel and still stuff things up for you?
He does it every time.
Mm. Smokey Yunick is a legend. It is a name synonymous with, a very colourful past that NASCAR has, and I know you made comments last week that I heard through the ether of NASCAR board meetings used to be, you know, a son and a father getting together in a hallway just saying, well, this is how we're going to do it. And Smokey Yunick certainly was bit by a few decisions, a few hallway decisions. But I had an opportunity to speak to this legend. This is a taste of a longer interview that we're going to play next week, and it is with the legend himself, Smokey, and he talks about dirt track racing because that is a skill that only really ARCA now still has, or a discipline that ARCA racing in stock cars in America still has to be able to handle.
Dirt track is a whole different deal and actually more fun than the asphalt. But the dirt track racing has quite a few problems that are really not solvable. It's a very dirty event, and doesn't lend itself to a track like this, a mile and a half or 2.5 miles. The maintenance and to keep it in shape when you go over a half mile are pretty damn near impossible. 3/4 of a mile maybe, and a mile you're really stretching it. You're going to get holes that are really past being okay. And so dirt track racing, you might as well make up your minds for short tracks and smaller audiences. but it's probably more fun than racing on the asphalt because you can slip and slide some.
Yes, this man who sounds like he's definitely driven a few hard miles there.
Well, he started racing in the early 40s, so came back from... started getting involved in motorsport in the early 40s, but went to war, came back from the war, and then moved down to Daytona. Had the best damn garage in Daytona Beach, and we get to hear a lot about Smokey Unick, his life, and it is some great stories that he tells. Of course, he's very famous for cheating, and he has his own very, very unique way of looking at that period of NASCAR's history.
Yeah, I think that's the time where if they couldn't figure out what you were doing illegal, therefore it had to be legal.
Well, no, therefore, well, what you'll hear next week is if Smokey Unick did it, it had to be wrong.
Okay. As we mentioned a little bit earlier, Phil Branigan made mention of the fact that he was at Simmons Plains last week for the BRC Gasser Super Touring Championship, and one of the young drivers making his debut there in the Super Touring Championship was Owen Kelly. We had a chance to catch up with Owen a little bit earlier on. A driver making his first appearance in the BRC Gasser Australian Super Touring Championship last weekend was Owen Kelly, driving the Thermo King BMW, a car that's prepared by Paul Morris's Nemo Racing Team. Owen, a good introduction for you to the Super Touring with 2 second places.
Yeah, no, it was. It was, I couldn't really have wished for a better debut. It was, I sort of aimed to be top five, and anything above that was going to be a bonus. So, no, it worked out pretty good.
Mm. I must admit, we watched the coverage today, Shane, on Channel 7 for those viewers in Australia and listeners in Australia. But you certainly gave Paul Morris, the team owner there, a bit of a worry, didn't you?
Yeah, there wasn't any team orders, but the first priority was to wrap up the championship for Paul and make sure I kept John Henderson behind me, which we achieved. So that was good.
Mm. Now, this is, of course, your first outing in a Super Tourer, so your first time out with things like sequential gearboxes and the like?
Yeah, I hadn't driven the car till the Friday, and it was left-hand drive, which I hadn't done before either. But after five or six laps, you sort of forget about it, that it's left-hand drive, and the gearbox, honestly, it only takes sort of two or three laps to come to grips with that. They're pretty good to use. And then it's just a matter of getting on with it and finding your braking points and things and start to string some laps together.
Mm. Now, previously you've driven some Formula Ford. You've also done a lot of testing driving for the big Kev Commodore for Paul Morris. How did you find it, say, from those cars stepping into the BMW?
The BMW is a lot... It's more like a Formula Ford than a V8. It's, you can go quite deep under brakes and the cars are really stable and very little body roll, and whereas the V8s are a lot heavier and they roll around a bit more and they've got quite a bit more grunt. So, the BMW is definitely more like a Formula Ford than a V8, but awesome cars to drive.
Mm. Now, you're hoping at this stage to try and get some sponsorship lined up to do the final two rounds of the championship at Wakefield Park and Oran Park early next year?
Yeah, we are. We're, I think Thermo King were pretty happy with the coverage they received at Simmons Plains, so I think they'll be on board for the last two rounds again, which should be great.
Mm. And, of course, a chance for you to possibly make a move to get yourself into something a bit more in a full-time drive for the 2001-2002 season, if need be.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for. I mean, I really want to be in a V8 next year in either the Shell series or the Konica series. So hopefully this will stand me in good stead for that.
Mm. And would your plan be there to run something in conjunction with Paul for the V8s, or would you be doing something on your own?
No, it'd definitely be something to involve Paul somehow. I mean, it may be in one of his cars in the V8 series, and I'd definitely like to continue my relationship with the team, just build on what we've already sort of done this year.
Mm. And in terms of where you want to go in the future, is it, will you see your future being, say, in V8s?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I really I'd like to go overseas and race open wheelers like a lot of blokes, but I think realistically, it's a little bit out of the money side of it's a little bit out of my reach, so I think I'm better off to concentrate on a V8 drive here.
Mm. Yeah, of course, the race meeting that you're at was the first time the Super Tourers have been back to Simmons Plains since 95. Simmons Plains probably would be the closest thing you would have to a home circuit down there for you in Tasmania.
Yeah, definitely. Last time I raced there was 94 in a HQ Holden. So, Simmons hasn't, or Tassie didn't have a V8 round this year, so it was good that they had a round of the 2 litre championship, because unfortunately the fans down there are a little bit starved for motorsport, so it was good.
Mm. And of course, according to all results, Toker are very happy with the crowd and some had down there, and they look forward to going back to Simmons Plains in the future.
Yeah, no, they were really happy, and as I said, there was no V8 round, so the crowd really sort of turned it on for the 2 litre race.
Mm. Well, Owen, thanks for joining us this evening on Inside Motorsport. Now, that will catch up with you at the next round of the BAC Gas and Super Tours when you come up to Wakefield Park in New South Wales.
Absolutely, thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, Owen Kelly there, another one of the young and up-and-coming drivers is being through Formula Ford, started out in HQ Holdens. I think going from HQ Holdens to Formula Ford, that's sort of a bit of a strange path, isn't it?
Well, the HQs in their day, the people were spending an awful lot of money and trying to put a lot of sophistication into something that was supposedly a base model race series, so there could be a progression there.
Mm.
If you were going to pick a Bathurst winner for 2001, how would you do it?
Dang if I know at this point in time.
Lotto numbers.
All right, I've got an interesting one for you here. Thanks very much to Kylie Mabus, who joins us each and every Formula Ford race, because Garth Tander this year was the winner of the Australian Formula Ford Championship 3 years ago, and this year went to Mount Panorama with also a fellow Formula Ford graduate of the same year, Jason Barguana. And if you look at Formula Ford winners to Bathurst victories, the average is 3 years, and in fact Craig Lowndes did it 3 years after clinching the Formula Ford title. Larry Perkins, Russell Ingall teamed up and won in 95, which they were obviously, well, that was Russell Ingall.
A long time before for Larry to be the Formula Ford champion.
Larry was 71 and Russell Ingall was 1990.
Larry looks 71.
Yes, and but Jason Bright won it 3 years after securing a Formula Ford championship. Stephen Richards won it in 89 and 99. Which 94 was his victory year, so he was 1 year off. So if you were to take the 3 year average, all right, then your money should be on Adam Macro, who certainly did nothing wrong in his drives, I think it was with for Tickford, wasn't it?
No, he was the guy in the Asia Online Commodore.
Oh, he was John Faulkner.
That unfortunately took out the race leader at the time.
All right, so he's done the heaps wrong by your eyes. But Greg Ritter, which will be the winner in 2002, and Luke Gilden in 2003.
Well, there you go. We'll have to pin that up on the wall, and we'll come back and check that in a couple of years' time and see how many we've got.
But conceivably, all three of those drivers, you would not think are an outside chance. You'd think, having seen what they've done in Formula Ford, they are a good chance at pulling off a race like that.
Mm. That's the way to go.
And it's just hard to think that, if you were to win the Formula Ford Championship, could you imagine, well, 3 years' time, I'm going to be racing the Bathurst?
Mm.
You'd probably,
career plan.
Yeah, it's a nice career plan, but too bad Ford don't have enough seats to ensure a continuity with the Blue Oval.
Yeah, you get that. Yeah, Adam Macro, well, was lucky enough to have a chat to him on the Saturday afternoon.
I like
at
Adam.
Bathurst, and good guy, and yeah, it was just a little disappointing he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But, yeah, I think he has got a promising career in front of him.
At least Nat Neal took out of Holden as much as he took out of Ford.
Yeah, okay.
And Matt Neal has signed with Peugeot for the British Touring Car Championship.
That's right, I forgot to mention
they've,
that.
They've made an announcement that they've got 3-car squad of Peugeot 406 Coupes.
An ex-Aussie.
And they've got lead driver is going to be Steve Soper, Matt Neal, the second driver, and a new young driver, Dan Eves, who's been in the National Saloon Car Cup. He is going to be the other driver in that team. That's in the touring class, and of course they're going to be running some other Peugeots in the production class. And it's actually looking quite interesting, that series, because they've got three Vauxhall Astras running in the touring class, the three Peugeot 406 Coupes in the touring class, four Alfa Romeo 147s
in the touring class. One of those is going to be driven by Enzo Mucci, who's the Italian Formula Ford 1600 class champion. So, again, another Formula Ford champion. They've also got a Lexus IS200, which is being driven by Kurt Luby, and it's possibly a second car there. Now, he was an early Formula Ford champion in Britain, and also a BMW driver over there, and a couple of BMW 320i's in the production class, so things looking good for them. But anyhow, we mentioned a little bit earlier Wakefield Park, the Australia Long Weekend. We mentioned it the last couple of weekends, the Wakefield 500. We had a chance to talk to the organiser of that event a little bit earlier this afternoon. The BOC Gasser's Super Touring Championship returns to Wakefield Park over the Australia Day Long Weekend, but they will probably be maybe a support act for one of the other events that's taking place, a mini enduro, the Wakefield 500, for cars from the Daewoo Challenge. Now, the organiser of that event, Paul Pickett, joins us on the line now. Paul, the Wakefield 500, it sounds like it's going to be quite an interesting event.
Mate, it's going to be fantastic. I'm looking forward to it, and it's an ideal event for the average sort of competitor that never gets a chance to drive at your typical endurance event like Bathurst.
Mm. Now, it's using the cars that you're using currently in the Kumo Daewoo Challenge series, and I believe you've actually got to build a few new cars because you've got a maximum grid of 25 cars.
We do. We actually own 19 cars, and we're going to run up to 25, so provided we fill the grid, and I'm pretty sure that we will, we'll have to build another 6 cars, and that's what we're looking at the moment.
Now, at this point in time, you've got a few people have already announced or put in their entries, and can you tell us who some of those people are?
Yes, look, we've had a lot of interest from a lot of different quarters, actually. People like Ross Palmer have indicated that he's going to have a run. Ian Luff also wants to have a run. There's something to be sorted out there yet, but we've also got Gary Holt and Gary Wilmington, a fellow by the name of Tyler Mecklen, which I'm sure you're aware of from the V8 Supercars, is looking at it as well. So there's a lot of drivers that you may not expect to see down there may be there.
Of course, Gary Holt, Gary Wilmington, they're both involved with running the things at Wakefield Park, so for them it's a chance to get out on their own circuit.
Oh, definitely. I think, Gary will be well-versed in terms of the circuit layout, of course, and there's a few of our drivers coming out of the 2000 Kumo Challenge that are going to have a go as well, so, you know, they'll be aware of the cars and the circuit layout as well, but it's not going to be one by the fastest car. I think it'll come down to strategy and a little bit of luck on the day.
Mm. Now, of course, being an endurance race, you've got pit stops, tyre changes, the whole thing.
That's right, yep. There'll be a compulsory 4 tyre change, and we supply all the tyres, all the fuel, all the entries, everything is supplied on a one-off fee. There'll be driver changes, and there'll be refuelling as well, which will be controlled. There'll be a minimum time, probably of 4 or 5 minutes for a refuel. And there'll be safety cars as well. You just won't be able to refuel under the safety car there.
Mm. Now, in terms of this, you mentioned that you've got some of the people from the Kumo Challenge there getting involved. Have you got some of the drivers from the current series who have sort of, you know, been fighting against each other during the year have decided, OK, let's combine our forces for this event?
We have, actually. You know, the price to do the 500K event is $9,900, including GST. And we've got a few drivers that are banding together in three driver teams, which surprised me because I thought most people would want to be in a two-person team. But we've got a number of three-person teams, and they're all putting aside their differences. Not that they had any differences apart from on the track, and they're all running together in the same cars.
Mm. Now, of course, it's a 500 kilometre event, or does it also have a time factor there in case they don't reach the 500 kilometres by a given time?
It does. It's actually 228 laps, which is as close to 500 k's as we can get, or 6 hours, whichever occurs first.
So no doubt probably hoping where it is at the Australia Long Weekend, you're planning for bright, shiny, sunny weather, no rain like they had at Bathurst, and therefore you should get the maximum number of laps in.
I certainly hope we don't have the same type of rain that they had at Bathurst, but a little bit of water during the day wouldn't hurt to mix things up, but being the middle of summer, I expect that it's going to be pretty hot down there.
And that's probably one of the telling factors, is the fitness of the drivers with the heat in the cars.
Look, I think that's going to be part of it for sure, but these cars aren't very difficult to drive, and I think provided you just run at sort of 90% of your normal pace, you'd be able to drive all day without a problem.
Mm. Now, of course, is there going to be anything in terms of rules in terms of maximum amount of time that somebody can stay behind the wheel?
Yes, there is. I'm just putting those further sporting regulations together at the moment. but we're looking at probably 55% or 126 laps as being the maximum time that any one driver can do.
Because that way it ensures that somebody doesn't hog all the good lap times.
That's right. I mean, there's no restriction on who can drive in this particular event, which is different to the Kumo Challenge. I don't allow anybody from, you know, with a background like Craig Lowndes or that type of calibre of driver can't do it. But in the 500k event, if Craig wanted to have a drive, then bring him on.
Jeez, I think he's looking for a drive currently. I think I might be able to, yeah.
Yes, you might be able to get him into a car. He does need a drive.
Yeah, we were talking last week about possibly getting Mr. Bates in, and I reckon he could be a pretty good hot shoe.
Was that Master Bates?
Or either one of them. Anyhow, the other thing, of course, is that with the 500-kilometre race, it's on the Saturday.
That's
and
right.
What time does it start on that Saturday?
It kicks off at 10 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and it'll finish off at 4. And it's all televised. It'll be televised in a two-hour highlights package on SBS and Foxtel, and it'll be 15 minutes as well on Channel 7.
Right, yeah. Oh, you're getting everything there, because you're actually getting the coverage coming from the Super Touring coverage for
That's
the BSA
right.
Gases Championship and the rest as well.
That's right. We've got a couple of unique activities happening through the 500k event as well. We're going to actually do a top 10 shootout, just like they do at Bathurst, and whoever gets the fastest qualifying lap will win pole, of course. They also win $2,000 cash. And another thing that we're doing through the race is at every hour we'll open a 5-minute window of opportunity where the person that does the fastest lap for that five minutes wins $500 as well. So it's going to be an interesting way to mix things up during the proceedings.
Mm. Now, of course, the Kumo Challenge, which you've been running with the Daewoo Challenge over the last couple of years, it's actually become very, very popular amongst people who want to get their foot in the door with motorsport, want to learn
That's right.
about car control and getting themselves into that sort of field of activity. I know the number of times I've seen guys driving in the championship, they come in from a race and they're all smiling and saying, oh, I got you there and I got you there.
That's right, yes.
Again, you've got the series running again in 2001, and I believe you're taking applications for people for the championship currently.
That's right, Colin. The series has become very successful, you know, from the competitors to the sponsors and CAMS officials. Everybody's happy as Larry with it because it's running really well. It's ideal. It's ideal for competitors coming out of go-karting or even novices. It's the best entry level into motorsport that you could ask for, to be honest with you. And the competitors, you know, there's always a friendly rivalry there. But when they get back into the pits and have a bit of a joke with each other, you know, they're all great mates.
Well, if there are people who do want to contact you about either the Wakefield 500 or the Kumo Daewoo Challenge for next year, where can they contact you, Paul?
They can ring me in Sydney on 02-9684-1999, but they'd have to be very quick because the Wakefield 500 is filling up very quickly, as is the 2001 Kumo Challenge. So if they ring me on that number, I'd be happy to send them out some information.
And no doubt you'll be happy to hear from people who are interested in competing in either of those two events.
I would love to hear from people. We'd just like to get the grids full up to 25 this year in both events and series. And, you know, I'm looking forward to 2001. It's going to be a good year.
Mm. Now, I believe the guys have got a little bit of work for repair of the cars before the Wakefield 500, because you had your last round at Eastern Creek a couple of weeks back, I think it was, and the red mist did descend on a few of the drivers.
The red mist certainly did descend, and I know, in the second race we were down from 18 cars to 12, so we lost a third of the field. It was just cattle station racing. You know, Kyle Johnson was a clear winner of the series. He was the most consistent. He walked away with $40,000, and in fact, it's interesting to note that the top three drivers, which was Kyle Johnson, Alan Gurr and Chris Lowry, all come from a go-karting background, so it seems to suit people coming out of go-karting because they tend to adapt fairly quickly to the cars, and they already have a lot of racecraft coming out of go-karts.
And of course, it's probably a good launching point for those drivers, and if they want to go into other categories such as, say, Super Tours, Future Tourers or one of the other groups.
Definitely, you know, the amount of improvement that I see in our drivers from the first round to the last round is amazing. These cars aren't particularly fast cars, but because they're not fast, they require a lot of car control and smooth driving to get a fast, rewarding lap out of them. So the amount of improvement is just amazing.
Mm. Well, Paul, we'll no doubt be covering the Wakefield 500 before the event. Probably have to talk to you a bit closer to the time to have a look at a review of the entry list for this mega event. practice and qualifying on the Thursday and Friday, the race on the Saturday. So, as we say, we'll be in contact before then to review the grid, as they say.
Fantastic.
And report on the event, and no doubt, hopefully it'll be a great event. I reckon 500 k's around Wakefield Park in those days will be mega.
It'll be very interesting, and we want it to become an annual event as well, so we'd like it to become synonymous with club-level motorsport.
Paul Pickett, thanks for joining us on Inside Motorsport today.
Thanks, Colin.
And, of course, we're still looking for sponsors. I think we need $10,000 to secure our ride, and any sponsor that would be interested in having a very, well, talkative, if not mobile, team.
Very well covered by the media.
It would be.
Yep, we can guarantee that because of our contacts around the place. It would be probably the most covered car on the field, in the field, through the field, over the field, anywhere in the field.
And, yeah, we're open to all offers. We are only accepting $10,000 as a sponsorship promotional fee. We could probably work out some arrangement with Inside Motorsport as well. But, yeah, we're certainly more than capable of handling three shifts.
In a day, we're...
In a day, we're...
Some of us have more experience in them as others.
Peter's already got the car, so all we need is the money to pay us our driving fee.
Don't tell the wife that we might be doing some practice leading up to it.
But it is Christmas time, and the bad news is Oldsmobile is about to fire off its last shot.
That's right. The USA's oldest auto brand is near the end of its road. General Motors will phase out its Oldsmobile division over the next several years, and also throughout General Motors, reducing salaried employment by 10%. They're sort of battening down the hatches, ready for potentially tough times to come. But in recent years, GM has denied repeated rumours about plans to end Oldsmobile. The automaker has defended its brand management system as the best way to capture sales in the mature US market for cars and trucks. Oldsmobile has been struggling as General Motors attempted to recast the division as an alternative to near-luxury import cars. And unfortunately, November sales were down 28% despite an incentive program. And just catch this for an incentive program. It lets buyers to forgo the down payment, monthly loan payments and interest charges for 1 year. So basically, you pick up the car, drive it for a year, and then you start paying. And sales were still down 28%. The GM executive said that in bidding a slow farewell to the 103-year-old brand was no means easy, but came necessary to curb the losses. The action ends the oldest American automaker, started by Mr. Ransom E. Olds, as the Olds Motor Vehicle Company in Lansing in 1897. Worldwide, only Mercedes-Benz is older.
And really does squash the American theory that Mr. Ford invented the car.
Ford was the first one to do a mass-produced production line. Oldsmobile was really just almost a hand-built type thing, pumping out just a couple.
Well, it was an American Bentley, wasn't it?
Effectively, yeah. Oldsmobile back in 1985 sold over a million vehicles.
Well, in 1990, that was the Chevy that Tony Raines and I were working on. He was driving an Oldsmobile. That was about half the field back then in the ASA days. The Oldsmobile was half the field and the other half was Buick. The Lumina body style came out, and because it was slightly sleeker, halfway through the season, a few of the teams started changing over to the Lumina body. And then you had about two Fords, as in most motor racing series, outside of NASCAR.
Yeah, thanks for that one, Craig. But yeah, time...
Hey, I'm a Ford man!
You wouldn't know it at times.
Oh, I'm just a realist.
Okay, here we go. Anyway, back to Oldsmobile. Yes, they had some glory days back in the mid-80s, but more recently they've sold 350-odd thousand cars in the year, so it's come an awful long way down, and unfortunately the current models will be it, and we'll string them out for 1 or 2 years.
Americans and yourself might know this line. In the future, it will only be your dad's Oldsmobile.
Well, that's one of their marketing problems that they've had. The Oldsmobile was linked to dad's. It was for middle-age, middle-class people, and it just didn't capture the excitement of current models.
Well, Pontiac, of course, were the winners of the NASCAR Championship this year, but they've got a reduced field because Dodge has come in and stolen a good majority of the Pontiac Grand Prix runners.
Yeah, that's a bit of a pity. Pontiac, of course, is another one of the General Motors brands. But
it's one you can live with.
That's right.
You know, it's not as in-your-face as Chevrolet.
That's right. That's why I
quietly cheered for Bobby Labonte throughout the year, when, of course, Dale Jarrett wasn't right up there.
Yeah, but you didn't like anyone but Earnhardt.
Yes, that's right. There's a lot of people who just cheer for everyone except Earnhardt.
Mm, and, of course, the kid now. Heidi hates the kid. The princess saw him at Charlotte and just said, too cocky, don't want to know about him.
He should hang up the helmet now if Heidi doesn't like him.
Yeah, well, that's it. His career's gone. If you're looking for Christmas memorabilia, of course, the videos have hit the Checker Flag bookshop, and we should mention that on top of the Bathurst videos...
Shell Championship Review video, the HRT Year in Review video, Larry Perkins Endurance Man video. Yeah, is there any...
The list goes on and on, but the Rally Championship video is soon to be hitting the shelves, which is a slightly... longer version than what you saw on 10 Capital today.
Always
is. With some shots that didn't make the television coverage.
Same with the FIA Formula One World Championship video. Again, it's on sale, and it as well includes exclusive footage that you don't see on the television stuff. It includes the stuff that normally comes off the Bernie's own FIA television.
Mm-hmm.
That's around. Of course, there's videotapes like the Grid 2000, Grand Prix World 2000,
The kart season
review. There's actually an interesting video that's called Ken Tyrrell Surviving Formula One, which is one of the Duke videos, which is actually a bit of the history of Ken Tyrrell in Formula One. Good viewing. Given the demise or eminent departure from Formula One of Murray Walker, there is a tape called Murray's Magic Moments, which does include some of his most memorable fluffs and boo-boos in terms of... And he, from this position, he can't possibly lose, whereupon the car spears off into the bush and says, well, unless I'm very much mistaken, he just did. We've got the 2000 Auto Trader British Touring Car Championship videotape is out.
End of an era video.
End of an era, that's for sure. Got NASCAR Legends is out there as well.
That is a great video. Have you seen that one?
Nope.
Oh, it's fantastic. It goes right back to 43 or 44... And the shots from the beach of Daytona when they raced half on the dirt, half on the sand, and some great Fireball Roberts is in there. Just all names that just are so synonymous with racing and really do sound like they should be racing out there down south.
And actually one for all the Subaru fans, mentioning Subaru Rally of Canberra as it is now, there's one called Subaru Impreza, Performance Car of the Decade, again another one by Duke, and it's actually history of the Subaru Impreza both in rallying and the various hot road versions, includes a lot of coverage in various events including the festival at Silverstone, a chat with David Lapworth, look around the ProDrive workshops, viewing stuff from a lot of the national rally championships around the world, and that one goes for just over an hour. And actually, that would be one if you are a Subaru fan. There's one on the best of British, the Mini, and the history of the Mini over the years at 40 years old.
Enzo Ferrari, of
Enzo
course,
Ferrari.
The one.
Yeah. You know, for the Ferrari, the Tifosi, there's one there. Even one on the Dodge Viper. There's a supercars one, which is on the sports cars. I think there's, Le Mans 2000.
American Coys, Le Mans series.
Yep, Coys and Goodwood Motor Circuit Revival. So there's stacks.
That's
of
when Muddy Talker throws himself off the bike and can't make France. The glory of Goodwood.
There you go. So there's all those sort of things that are out there currently. Rally World 2000. For those people who like things, there's the Race of Champions coverage as well. No doubt as well, there's books, and there's books galore. There's Auto Course, which we've mentioned earlier. There's the Kart Yearbook Review. There's the British Touring Car Championship Review. There's also, probably early next year, a bit too late for Christmas, is Touring Car World, which is the Bible for touring car people around the world. If you can read German, there is a DTM book comes out each year, which has got some of the most incredible photography you've ever seen. And
of course, with what the DTM is now... which is V8 supercars with really
German bodies.
Yeah, with really fancy names like Audi and Mercedes.
And Opel.
Yeah.
Which is just another version of Holden.
Yeah, but it sounds more mysterious than.
If you want to give something to somebody, the gift that lasts all year, of course, a subscription to Motorsport News or V8X magazine.
And of course, Kart Oz and. Oval Express, who are all good supporters with us, along with the GTP racer.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if people are into something they can put on the shelf and look polished and great, of course there's the scale model cars, the die-cast ones from our friends at Bianchi over in Western Australia. They've got the exclusive rights on the Holden Racing Team cars, which are out currently. They've got the...
Which cost them a fortune.
Craig Lowndes and Mark Scaife cars, and apparently they have sold like hotcakes. They've also just released the Dick Johnson, the first of the Dick Johnson XC Falcons. Apparently they are going out the door like nobody's business, as well as the Moffat Cobra from...
That was... Is that the one that he torched? He finished the race and it was... I'm thinking of the 76 model, I think it was. And that was the XC. It was the XC and he parked the two XCs together and he got a like 20-litre drum of petrol and just doused the two cars and set a match to them because they were such lemons for him. Which, of course, with the XB, he and... Colin Bond had to throw the anchor out to make sure he didn't pass him in the last few laps, but... The following year they went back with the XC Cobras and he had a ritual burning, which I will always remember.
Yep, and then
Craig, you said you're a Ford fan.
I am, but
why do you bring up these painful paths?
Because, like I said, I'm a realist.
Well, for the Moffat fans, the Moffat ones are part of the Moffat collection. They've actually got a signed certificate, you know, they're numbered from Alan Moffat. And then classic collectibles, of course, they've got the 64th scale, like the Dinky, the Matchbox cars for the kiddies. 43rd scale for the collectors, and they've got the big 1/8, which include last year's Bathurst winner, the car from Richards and Murphy, and they've got a few others out there, including
the people who have got the fireplace that just never will be used. Like, a mantle for a 1/8 model car must be huge.
Well, actually, the most exclusive one currently, which has just been released in Europe, is a 1/8 scale rather than 1/18.
Mm-hmm.
1/8 scale, last year's Williams BMW. And they sell for £1,000, and they are a very limited edition. They actually incorporate carbon fibre and so on into the construction of those for the real Formula One aficionado.
And it's got to be the worst looking car on the grid. Like, if you were going to spend £1,000 for a model car, you'd want a Jordan.
At 1/8, you could almost hop in it.
Almost, or put the babies in it.
Yeah.
And for those who are into building their own, Tamiya of Japan, their latest kit has just been released in Japan, should arrive in Australia in the new year, unfortunately. They've actually got two Ferraris out. They've got the Ferrari 360 Modena, like Mark Noski runs in the GDP Cup, and Michael Schumacher's winning Formula One car from this year. It's a 1/20th scale, full engine detail. Send pictures of the model on the Tamiya net site, www.tamiya.com.
Yeah, but that's real good. Like, I can spell Tamiya from you saying it.
And T-A-M-I-Y.
Yeah, okay, my point is made.
But anyhow, that's for those who want to build their own. That's actually a brilliant kit, very, very accurate. So lots of good stuff there.
Thanks very much for joining us in the studio all this year, Colin Ford, and belatedly in the year when you did wander your way back from America.
Yeah, thanks, Craig.
We do have one more show in this year, though. I've just remembered as I said that.
And one thing we have to point out is that we need bigger Christmas trees. Running through that list, we need the national Christmas tree, something huge, to fit them all in.
And somebody to buy them for us.
More importantly, remember, $10,000 gets you on the side of a Daewoo that we're driving. But we'll also put it on the bottom, just in case.
Yes, I actually remember that there was a driver some years ago who did actually have on the skid plate underneath a repeat of his sponsors.
John Bauer with the Dick Johnson Falcon at Phillip Island.
Well, thanks for us. That's all for this week from Inside Motorsport. And I've just got to make sure I hit the right button now.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.